This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Alicia Heglin-Thorpe. It's no surprise that there's a shortage of healthcare workers around the country and in North Dakota. In the midst of the pandemic, many left their careers, and that's left a big impact on the healthcare system. And to add to that, our state is facing a severe mental health professional shortage and substance abuse crisis. So visiting us today to address these topics and more is United States Health and Human Services Regional Director of Region 8, Lily Griego, to discuss the Health and Human Services and Biden administration initiatives of a national tour to strengthen mental health and to discuss the overdose prevention strategy. And she's touring the state. She did tour the state this past week, and today she's here to share some of her findings. Welcome, and thank you, Director Griego, for your time today.
Thank you, Alicia. I really appreciate the time with you today. Please feel very comfortable just to call me Lily.
Okay, Lily. Let's start then with where does Region 8 cover?
Well, again, thank you for having me. And as we begin our time together, I really like the way you intro'd this time together and our conversation. So if I could be so bold as just to say thank you to those across North Dakota who are working every single day and giving their heart, their passion, everything that they have within them to serve other North Dakotans in healthcare. And it's a large field, so there are specialty areas, but just to make sure that folks are healthy, happy, and sustaining some of the gaps and the shortages that we have. So I just want to acknowledge those in the space and those who joined me this week. So moving on to your question, Region 8, I'm proudly serving the Biden-Harris administration. I was appointed by the White House to represent Secretary Javier Becerra. He is the first Latino in history to hold this position, appointed by President Biden. And I think that representation does matter. So I call that out when I speak of who I represent while I'm here, knowing that it's a privilege to do this work and to serve the American people in this capacity. We represent in Region 8 six states, which I'll list for you, and 30 federally recognized tribal nations as a government-to-government relationship. The states that we represent are my favorite, by the way, why I work in this community and serve and drive and travel through this region. They're beautiful, they're unique, and they really represent not just the ruggedness of the geography, but the character of the people in this part of the country. So it's Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, North Dakota, and South Dakota.
Okay. And is this your first trip to North Dakota?
It's my first trip ever. I was so excited to come up. I couldn't believe it. So I got to travel through your state. And may I share where I went?
Yes, please. Okay. And your first impressions.
My first impressions, it's a beautiful state, beautiful people. I really enjoyed my time here immensely. I drove from Bismarck up to Payson and drove over to Beulah, left there and went up to Minot and spent the night there. But then I made my way over to the three affiliated tribes and was in Newtown, made my way back to Spirit Lake Nation, drove all around the lake, Devil's Lake and the others in the community there. I got to know some folks, even stopped in Anamu. I hope I said that correctly.
Yes, yes.
Then made my way over to Grand Forks and, of course, made my way over to Fargo, where I'm ending my trip here in North Dakota.
Okay. Yes, you got to see a lot of scenery on that trip, that's for sure. And we got you on I'd say, you know, it's not winter, so you probably good scenery.
I've heard that I was lucky to come at this time of the year. So I guess that's where that rugged nature comes from, is to survive the wind that you have here and the,
yes,
and the temperature, the frigid temperatures.
Yes, yes. It certainly is beautiful and a struggle. It's a beautiful struggle. Let's put it that way. You had an extensive itinerary in North Dakota. You met with several healthcare leaders, tribal leaders, in an effort to strengthen that government-to-government relationship. You participated in roundtable discussions. You took several tours of healthcare facilities on true tribal nations and more, I would imagine. But what are some of the key takeaways here how MHA Nation and Spirit Lake Nations, for example, are working to expand that healthcare service in their communities?
Sure. So when I met with a gentleman at the University of North Dakota, he said, if I can give you three takeaways, top three, he said, workforce, workforce, workforce. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was really relevant to the entire trip. Rural or urban, one of the things that we've heard are retention and recruiting healthcare providers here to include specifically your dental field. So folks who have services in North Dakota that are affordable or accessible with insurance, we are hearing of wait list in excess of 1,500 people getting into specific centers. And so knowing that if we're doing preventative medicine, that we're seeing healthier bodies, and that that can also lead to healthier minds. But when you have chronic illnesses and you have, you know, healthcare deserts, if you will, then we see that folks are hurting across the board, and that leads to other areas of pain, which can be in the mental health sector. It can be with substance abuse or use. And, you know, it's part of our work to come out and listen to community members, what they're working on and the challenges and the successes. So we have heard some successes as well. And that is, for example, I think of the woman that has the mobile unit that does dentistry, and she travels to Indian country and she travels around the state. That's going to meet people and training and teaching young people as young as 5 to 10 year old how to appropriately brush their teeth and the time that it takes, including bringing their parents into the conversation about actually how long it takes to brush your teeth. And if you have a good, healthy mouth, what does that look like for the rest of your body? So these were really important discussions. I gave you just one example, but some of the things that we talked about were really technical in nature. That can be one of the agencies within HHS. And if you'll allow me just 1 second, HHS is a really big agency with really dedicated people working in each of the agencies. We have 8 operating divisions that most folks don't know about the detail that we cover. And I'm not an expert in one of these areas, but we have experts in each of these agencies that work with community members. And the importance of mentioning, I love that you asked about Region 8 itself. The fact that we're here, we're not disconnected from the American people. We're not, a lot of folks view, if you're in D.C., then you don't understand what's taking place in, you know, like I said, Anamoose, North Dakota. So if you're not traveling the roads, you don't understand the health disparities of rural America. And that's why we come to these locations. And so folks that work in multitude of agencies that we have, whether, and I'm going to use some acronyms that folks mm-hmm. may know and okay. may not, HRSA or SAMHSA. ACF works with children and families. ACL works with our disability community and our seniors. And so we have an agency that serves specific niche communities and niche needs, whether that's rural or urban, as I mentioned earlier. And I want to connect those experts to those who are working to decrease your disparities in the health sector, and those who have the power to listen to the community needs and connect folks to grant dollars or federal dollars, and really elevate our relationships with state, local, and tribal members to make sure that we're in conversation and dialogue and sharing with one another both resources and deficiencies. So that's part of the work that a regional director can do when we're on the road like this.
So you had mentioned that there was a lot of technical talk that you had.
Yes, ma'am.
So elaborate on that a little bit.
So we heard from some of the tribal nations on some of the processes that we have, and it's really helpful for us to hear when, for example, I was with the 3 Affiliated, I mentioned that, and they just opened up their diabetes center. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. center. I had the privilege to be able to be there the day after they had their grand opening, and I had the young man who gave me a tour along with Kathy Eagle was Jared Eagle, and we talked about the facility, how beautiful it is, but the, you know, sadly there's a need for it. So it's great that the tribal nation was able to build the facility, but then we also need to talk about how the federal government is working with the tribal nation itself to serve the community. And so CMS is one of our agencies that we use. It's a Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And there are a lot of technical processes for Medicaid, Medicare, and sometimes we need to pull in our experts, as I mentioned, and make sure that our regional directors over those agencies understand if it's a systematic issue that's preventing folks from accessing resources. A lot of elders are unaware of some of the benefits that they're entitled to. And so we want to be having conversation with Jared and saying, these are the resources that are available to folks. What's preventing them from getting it? Is it internet service? Is it an ability to navigate our application process? And can we jump on a Zoom call? Can we jump on a phone call and walk through these processes and thereby decrease disparities? And so it's a complicated conversation when it comes to the technical criteria. And mm-hmm. that's where, again, I lean into the experts in each field.
You had touched base on this just shortly about mental health in this region as well. You know, strengthening people's lives after COVID. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, this comes in the form of better access to mental health care, adding more professionals to the mental health industry. Explain how those conversations kind of roll into the 988 rollout.
The 988 rollout that we're doing is actually a transition from our national suicide prevention line. And one of the roles that I have is to share secretarial priorities. It's an important component when we do this kind of travel and engagement with the community to listen. But we also like to share with folks what we're working on. And you just mentioned one of the secretarial priorities mm-hmm. is mental health. If you don't mind, I'll list the others and come back to your question.
Sure,
so
sure.
Health equity is at the forefront of all of our work. President Biden has really asked every federal agency, a whole of government approach, as he mentions it, to look at equity and literally look at how I've talked a little bit about the technical components, but anything that we're working on, is it being approached with an equity lens? And so Secretary Becerra has leaned into his directive from the Biden-Harris administration on this and asked each one of us to do the same. So that includes one of the roundtables that we had here in Fargo was a health equity discussion. Another component of our secretarial priorities is maternal health, decreasing maternal morbidity, really looking at from the beginning stages of pregnancy all the way to postpartum and ensuring, again, that we're really focusing on the woman and the child components of maternal health and increasing our ability to understand specific needs when it comes to different communities. Indigenous and Black women sadly lead our statistics when it comes to maternal morbidity, and that's not a statistical rate that anyone wants to be leading in. So we're looking at cultural components to this work and really, again, regional components, who's working in the space and understanding who our stakeholders are, and then working with them to navigate this process to increase resources for maternal health. Healthcare, we're talking about, but we want to make it affordable and accessible. Mental health, we're going to talk about now. Behavioral health, and also we'll touch on COVID-19 as it is still a priority because COVID-19 is still with us. And then, of course, we have the under 5 vaccines that were announced within the last 2 weeks. But as you mentioned, healthcare, I want to just kind of look at what the secretary has said, and he has noted healthcare is a human right. And that's why we want to make sure that it is affordable and accessible. Not only have we seen an increase in suicidality, but we've noticed that, and I think that you'll hear from many community members, COVID-19 exacerbated where we are with mental health. Mm-hmm. It's not a result. You'll hear many folks say that they were working in this space before COVID-19 hit us, before this global pandemic really just swallowed us up and created such a sense of isolationism. And so what we're doing is we're taking different approaches, but 988 is one of them. The National Suicide Prevention Line has been in existence for a very long time. It is a one, if I'm not mistaken, one 866 number, and I'm doing that from memory, so please forgive me if I miss that. And we're taking it to a 988 code that someone will dial and have a resource on the other end of the telephone in that moment of crisis. And we want to really just look at what's creating this space that we're getting to. 10 to 34-year-olds are experiencing suicide as the number two cause of death. And it's just one of the things that as a mom, as a human being, as a community member, I don't want 10-year-olds to be thinking about suicide. I want them to feel, as I heard from one of our community members this morning in Fargo, a sense of hope, a sense of forward-looking and future thinking. And so I'm really proud of the Biden-Harris administration for leaning into this space. And for those who are listening, we have the SAMHSA division, and Dr. Charles Smith is in Region 8. And I was really excited to hear that he has a lot of contacts up here in North Dakota and has been here himself. So members of the Region team and the staff that I mentioned who are so dedicated have been on the ground where I just was as well.
We're visiting with Region 8 Director Lily Griego of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services as she's finishing her tour across North Dakota to address issues surrounding mental health, access to care, and health equity. I have kind of a two-part question, if you will. So obviously your role as the regional director requires, you know, gathering data, participating in listening sessions, having discussions with state and tribal leaders. And now that you are gathering this data, what do you do with this information? And then secondly, do you get to bring any recommendations on board, or how does that work?
So what we do, to back up a second, we have 10 regions in HHS that cover the country and the territories and the islands. And what we do is we do a lot of fact-finding, as you just described. And if you would have seen us during any of the meetings that I had, either if it was one-on-one with someone or in a roundtable discussion, I take a lot of notes. I happen to be a note-taker. And in the generation of all technical and using an iPhone versus handwriting, I kind of do both. Mm-hmm. So what I like to do is review a lot of the takeaways and make sure that I'm hearing folks. So sometimes I even ask, can you tell me more? Can you elaborate? Can you give me a specific example? And then I really lean into the process that we are public servants. Federal government sometimes seems far away and disconnected, but we are public servants. And again, I just see it as such a tremendous honor to be able to be in this part of the country serving folks. But what we do is we turn this information over to Secretary Becerra every single week, and he is informed on what's going to be happening in every part, nook and cranny of the country. And we have a full team that is really supportive and working really hard for the American people in D.C. And we take this information and look at, can we come up with creative solutions to address the issues that are facing folks and plaguing folks when it comes to mental health or any of the other things that we've talked about here just briefly. And if there are already existing solutions, we have the power to then connect folks to resources. And then what Secretary Becerra does as well, he visits with congressional members. He goes to Congress to testify about what we're hearing across the country. It's a lot of work, and he's one man, but he's also on a national mental health tour taking in that information. And we take not just the policy recommendations from those helping him on the team in D.C., but then we take them to the lawmakers in Congress, and we share with them what the American people are telling us that they need. And that's a really important part of the federal government relationship between Congress and the federal administration.
So besides the numerous disparities that were addressed in your visit, let's talk about some of the more positive things that you're hearing about in our communities.
We heard, most especially in the federally qualified healthcare centers that I was fortunate enough to tour, that folks are being creative with the federal dollars that are coming into community and rehabbing older buildings. I had the infamous MARA tour that I got to see, and my history background lent into her tour of a building that has historic value to the community. And I also was in another one that was a national historic designation building. So seeing that the buildings that served generations before us of North Dakotans continue to be a valuable place where people gather for trusted messenger in their community. community, whether that's someone that's helping them with staying housed or getting a COVID test or getting a COVID-19 vaccination or bringing their baby or their neighbor to the site to get vaccinated because they know the facility, that they know the community members working there in that health center. But sometimes they show up and they want to visit with someone about their resources as it relates to harm reduction, or if they're seeking a visit with a dentist and perhaps they don't have the coverage that some of us are fortunate enough to have, and just making sure that they're identifying, is this an emergency situation or is this a situation that perhaps we can go onto a wait list and having those conversations. The other thing is the idea of philanthropic dollars working in tandem with federal dollars, state dollars that serve the communities. And so that was what's coming to mind for me would be the first roundtable that we visited with folks. And I mentioned that Ronald McDonald mobile unit that drives out to Indian Country, that drives out to the rural communities and is a mobile unit that people board and essentially are seen, then perhaps receive a tooth cleaning or visit directly with a dentist that travels in the bus. So that is the partnership and the collaboration that is necessary to meet the needs of Americans right now. It's this relationship and over-communication style of federal government that the Biden-Harris administration is looking at equity components when we have our calls to the governors or our calls to the, as I mentioned, the stakeholders in all of the states that we serve. And then also sitting and meeting with the nonprofit community, the advocacy community, and saying, you know, tell us how you're able to achieve the success that you are, and let's replicate that in other arenas if we can.
It's great to see how people are being creative in situations like this.
Exactly.
So what's next on your agenda then?
So I thought about this as I was coming to visit with you, and I shared at the roundtable this morning just hearing great stories that folks were thankful. I was really pleasantly surprised at more than one of the meetings that I had that folks thanked the administration for the work that we are doing and the information that we're sharing, whether it's on social media or in other avenues that we're getting out to folks, and we're able to regather, whether it's on Zoom or phone calls, but to be in person again, where the president used all of the tools in the toolbox to create a space where we are addressing COVID-19 and able to see one another so that we can have these substantive conversations. So that was a pleasant surprise. The next thing I'll be doing is taking this information, as I mentioned, and getting it to Secretary Becerra to ensure that he is aware of what North Dakotans are dealing with as it comes to workforce or healthcare issues. And then turning around and, you know, just really creating a sustainable environment where we're in dialogue with the folks that we met with and growing that network, making sure that folks feel comfortable, as I said, in each meeting, pick up the phone and call me. You know, if it's email, fine, let's do it by email. We'll connect you with the right folks and continue to be public servants that the federal government does in all of their work. And many of the conversations I had talked about the social determinants of health. So I'm not just dealing with health or HHS. We can also connect folks to our USDA counterpart. We can talk about education and continuing to talk about public student loan forgiveness. What does that look like if you want to be in the healthcare sector, but you're afraid of incurring all kinds of debt to be that kind of servant to your community? And then also housing. So I'm passing out names left and right from my counterparts at HUD, but then also looking to the local and state agencies that are, again, as dedicated and in partnership with us. And perhaps they're so busy working on their state needs, which are tremendous at this time, that they might not even know about some of the resources. So that's why it's really important to do this leaning in work where we're calling folks, meeting with folks, and sharing our resources and the goals of the administration.
How did you come into this position? I know you were appointed by the president, but how does someone get to be in a role like this?
So I actually, I don't think it's as hard as folks think. So I've been blessed by the spirit that my mother gave me of recognizing what education does. And so education is at the forefront of my work. And then I have this work ethic that I got from my dad, and I just drive into the work. So I've been in public service for a very long time. I didn't think I would ever get to a point where I'd say that I had done something for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. But sure enough, wouldn't you know it? So I've worked local government before, city government. I also worked at a county government. And oftentimes doing the work that I did, I noticed that community members were so focused on getting their kids to school in the morning, getting to work on time. And so living the life myself and knowing that it was harder and harder to get closer to the American dream, I sought goals and roles that would help me to teach others how to leverage the government to their benefit. And that led me to working for a United States senator in Colorado and knowing that, again, looking at policy, decision makers, where the power structure is for the country, but yet thinking of those everyday folks that I mentioned, knowing that I was one of them and that life can be really hard for us. And so all of the work that I did preceded my work here. And I was fortunate enough to want to serve this administration, to want to continue my service to the American people in the American West. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to have this role. But it's not as complicated as one would think. And I think that if someone is interested in this, I encourage them to shoot me a quick email, and I would give them the website where they can apply for a work. And you never know what can happen.
Thank you, Region 8 Director Lily Griego of the U.S. Department of Human and Health Services, visiting with us on Main Street today. Thank you so much for being a guest on our show, and thank you so much for the work that you do.
Thank you for sharing the story, and again, thank you for the time.
Up next, Sue Balcom is talking farmers markets, but first, this news.
Good afternoon from the Prairie Public Newsroom. I'm Todd McDonald. People using North Dakota's Substance Abuse Disorder Voucher Program can now get access to their treatment in bordering states. Pamela Sagnus is director of the DHS Behavioral Health Division. She says the goal is to encourage more people who are struggling with addiction to look for and receive treatment.
The representative actually brought forward this bill to address the limitation for individuals living in Wahpeton area, for example, from being able to get reimbursed if they saw a provider in Minnesota, like in the Breckenridge area. So it actually came forward from a real life situation where individuals were able to get into a service provider, but because of the current law, we were unable to use voucher funds to pay out-of-state providers.
Sagna says the change will allow North Dakotans who live in underserved areas to access treatment services closer to their homes.
In North Dakota, for example, we have limited options to seek opioid treatment services. And right now we only have programs in Bismarck, Minot, Grand Forks, and Fargo. So someone living in Williston may actually have a closer provider in Montana than even the options in Minot.
The chancellor of the North Dakota University System has been given a new two-year contract and a raise. The State Board of Higher Education made the decision after an executive or closed-door session with Chancellor Mark Hagerut. Casey Ryan is the board president.
We really appreciate what the chancellor has done. He's been a great leader. We do see him as visionary. He's led in a very difficult year, and just many thanks and want you to know the board is very supportive of your leadership and direction.
Hagerut responded,
"Any success attributed to me derives from my staff, from the presidents, who are the most thoughtful, collegial group on the front line. They all have a much harder job than I have. There's thousands of young brains with neuron synapses that any day can do something very different than they thought the day was going to be, but also this board."
Hagerut will get a 2.7% raise. That brings his salary to just over $400,000. Carrington Police Chief Brandon Sola was killed in a motorcycle accident in Fargo late Tuesday evening. He was 36. Sola was appointed chief of police in April of this year. This is Carrington Mayor Tom Erdman.
Brandon joined our department in November of 2021 as part-time and then full-time April 1st. He was an enthusiastic and welcome leader in our city and very active, and Brandon worked each and every day for the safety of our community. So together we mourn his death, and our thoughts and prayers are with his family and his friends.
Solo was headed west on I-94 when he lost control of the motorcycle. He was thrown from the motorcycle and landed in the median. He was not wearing a helmet. He survived by his wife and five children. For Prairie Public, I'm Todd McDonald.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Touchmark at Harwood Groves, Fargo, and on West Century in Bismarck. Touchmark offers maintenance-free living so residents have more time to enjoy what they love. Fresh prepared meals, health and fitness club, and a full calendar of events with friends nearby. Learn more at touchmark.com.
This is Main Street Eats. I'm Alicia Hegland-Thorpe, and we're joined today with root seller Sue Balcom and Ashley Thornburg, and we're talking about local farmers markets.
Because it's the end of June, and it's about time we got something out of the garden besides lettuce.
right? There's only so much lettuce one person can eat.
Oh, but I'm wondering if this isn't going to be a good year for farmers markets because of the supply chain issues and all kinds of things that are going on in the world. People are looking to local, and I have always believed that you should buy art from artists and you should buy food from farmers as much as you possibly can. So our market here in Bismarck, and I think probably across the state, if they haven't already started, are going to be gearing up for the first week of July as kind of target days to start their markets. And so we are going to talk about a few things to navigate your local farmer's market. Like, don't be afraid of farmers. Get there early. Boy, do you know everybody's best excuse? I'm not going to get out of bed and go to the market at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. Can you save something for me?
Ooh,
no, sorry. It's twice the price if I have to save it for you, because chances of you not showing up are probably good, too.
Yeah.
And so then I can't sell it to people who are actually out there early in the morning. And we do. It is true. Like, some markets don't allow you to sell before they open, quote unquote. But our market, I believe that, you know, if I have somebody that needs to be to work at 8, the market doesn't open till 8, and they tell me they're coming at 20 minutes to, I'm not going to not let them buy something on their way to work. I think that's only fair. So our market is kind of free for all. And I do a lot of pre-sales on Facebook. So if you have a farmer friend, that's one of the things you can do to keep apprised of what's in season for the week, whether the, you know, things at the early start, the early onset, like the first person with tomatoes to the market can get $4 a pound for them. But then, you know, as there becomes a glut of tomatoes, then, of course, you can buy them for canning probably at $2 a pound or buy the bushel for a better price, because then we're not lugging this stuff back and forth. But first of all, you have to find a farmer's market. And the number of markets has grown in the state of North Dakota.
Sure.
You know, there's more and more small towns that are trying to hold markets. But it's not easy in a state like this because we're agrarian by nature. And a lot of people still love to garden, and they plant an exorbitant amount of garden. And then they have lots of leftovers that they can donate to their neighbors. So people in this state are still doing a lot of their own gardening. But as the urban centers grow in North Dakota, we're finding that there's a lot of young people who are trending towards local. They like to buy local. They're trending towards healthier eating for their families. And it's just so stinking much fun to go visit with a farmer, isn't it? Like, find a farmer, make a friend. We're out there educating the public, you know, so don't be afraid to ask questions. If you see something that you're not familiar with, we can supply you with recipes. We can tell you all kinds of wonderful things about how it's grown. We can tell you the things about our practices, you know, on our farm. Like, are we using high tunnels for season extension? Are we using certain chemicals or not using certain chemicals? You know, our farming practices like that. So that's very helpful. But like I said, and I never got to this, you got to find a market first. I think that the Ag Department, NorthDakotaAg.com, I think, or something like that. It's easy if you Google it. You should be able to find their interactive map that will tell you where the markets are, pretty much what they offer. You know, we're trying to keep that updated so people know. But you have to understand that the season starts out light and just gets heavier and heavier and heavier towards the end of October. Our market goes through Halloween. Mm. So we always have pumpkins for sale on that day. And it's awesome to see people come by and pick their pumpkins out that day, you know, because we grow, in addition to, you know, your plain old jack-o'-lantern type pumpkins, you can get little baby pumpkins or white pumpkins or, you know, I have one grower in our market that grows the craziest looking gourds. I love gourds. So there's a variety of things, but right now we're just starting out, so you have to be patient. And like Ashley said at the beginning, you have to come early.
The early bird catches the worm.
That's right. And one of the reasons why our markets start early is because it's cooler in the morning, you know, and then by the time noon rolls around, not only are the vegetables wilted, but so are the farmers. Because most of them are either picking at 4 a.m., so that you get the freshest possible vegetables, or they're picking the night before. And we like to pick in the cool of the day because it's much easier to cool down your vegetables, and then that kind of gives them a little longer shelf life when they're cool. So I'm trying to tell my husband that definitely stop picking cucumbers in the afternoon. Like, get up and get out in the morning and nap in the afternoon. I mean, it just makes so much sense in my mind.
Yeah.
So.
I appreciate that it's so inexpensive at the markets, at the farmers markets.
Well, we'll have to see what happens this year because, oh, my gosh, inputs. And ever since growing gardens has become kind of a faddish sort of thing, you know, like you used to be able to buy seeds for 25 cents a pack and they'd be just like loaded full of seeds. Now when I buy seeds, they're $3 or $4 a package and it's 10 or 25 seeds. And you know what? I actually count them. I want to make sure I'm getting my money's worth out of the deal. But I have asked around and our market vendors are not planning on raising their prices. But it's true that the earlier in the season something shows up on the table, the more you're going to pay for it. However, when you look at the cost of the vegetables you're buying from somebody local, you've got to take into consideration that these people are your neighbors and that money will stay in the community 100%. You know, like that'll travel four times around your community. So you're supporting a local neighbor. If you do not support your local neighbor is going to get a job somewhere else and not show up anymore. And then you won't be able to buy these beautiful, fresh, and original vegetables and fruits, which last longer and are fresher from the get-go because they're not picked, cooled, stored, shipped up here, and then sold 2 weeks after they got out of the field. You're getting the absolute freshest produce, which means it will last longer in your refrigerator properly cooled. When you've got a pepper that when you cut into it, squirts you in the eye, you know you got a good pepper. I love peppers.
And a very sore eye.
And yes. Well, not the hot ones. Here's my little pepper hint for the day. There are a lot of people, I plant at least 100 pepper plants. I love peppers. I just love them. I have lots of great pepper recipes for both hot peppers and red peppers and green peppers and yellow peppers and orange peppers. A lot of people can't digest a pepper, like they have stomach issues with them. One of the things that you can do to kind of make a pepper more palatable if you're trying to bust into somebody's, you know, trying to broaden somebody's palate, and that is to take the skin off of them. And it's easy to do if you have a grill or a good broiler. You char the pepper and then peel that skin off. The skin is what's bitter and tough when you're eating a pepper. So,
but is that what also caused the discomfort in the stomach?
Yes, more. It's harder to digest. So,
That's where I'm at with red peppers.
Oh, God, I love red peppers. Oh, man. And I love to get like a red and a green and a yellow and an orange one. And then I'll roast them on the grill and I'll put them in a paper sack until the skins loosen up. And then you take them off and save all that juice. Try to save as much juice as you possibly can.
The stuff that didn't get in your eyes.
Right. When you cut them. I don't cut them until later then. But then I chop that up and put a little bit of olive oil on there and a little bit of vinegar and maybe some salt, and just makes a wonderful little side dish to pork on the grill or chicken on the grill.
I'll have to try that.
Kind of thing. So I would give them a try. I wouldn't discount peppers because they upset your stomach. There's lots of different varieties. You know, like I grow these Jedi jalapenos. Because I love Star Wars, and Obi-Wan is now on Disney Plus, and I'm savoring it 1 hour at a time, and then I wait 2 weeks and watch the next episode, you know, so that lasts a long time. But yes,
are you using like lightsabers to cut these?
Yes, that's a good idea. I might have to try that. Oh, she's learning.
That's
awesome. Oh my goodness, that's great. I really want
lightsaber.
I really want a little. Okay, Siri. I really want a Gorgu. I want a baby. It's not a baby Yoda because he's not Yoda, but I want one of those little green creatures that eats frogs. I mean, what's not to love about that? But these Jedi peppers are huge, like for making jalapeno poppers, which is, oh my gosh, that's a meal for us. Like,
yeah,
I'll make a dozen peppers and we'll each eat, you know, our halves. Filled with delightful cheese, back to cheese, and wrapped in bacon, sometimes with barbecue sauce on them. But you can get a jalapeno.
Yeah, that's a real vegetable for you.
You can get a jalapeno that isn't hot, but still has that really good jalapeno flavor to it. And then I grow something called red flames for pickling. You know, so you've got all these peppers, and they all have different purposes in life. So if you don't... If you aren't familiar with peppers, ask the person who's selling the peppers. We'll be happy to tell you. And bring cash when you go to the farmer's market. A lot of farmer's market vendors are getting into using Square and Apple Pay and all those kinds of things. But you
there's
know, some,
a fee.
Some, right, there's a fee. And sometimes it's just a matter of being so busy that it's difficult. Like, you're not close to an internet connection if you're in a parking lot or in a park somewhere. So you have to use your phone as a hotspot. So, and a lot of markets nowadays have to kind of come up with some plan for that, taking credit cards, because we are now SNAP authorized. You know, and so anybody who receives SNAP benefits can now shop for the freshest and best canned, baked, and grown goods at your local farmer's market. So if you've never done that before, please, please do not hesitate to approach your market and talk to them about how that works. And most markets have things for kids to do, so definitely bring your kids. I mean, what kid, after not going to school for the month of June, doesn't want to get up at 7 o'clock and go to the farmer's market?
I don't know. The kid kind?
So does the Red River Market start that early in the morning?
It's usually the second week in July, and it's usually, I think, right around 8 a.m. I got to remember now. But, it's early. I don't think 7.
Well, we're setting up at 7. We technically don't work.
Till
8.
I think it's 10.
Oh, is it that?
I can't remember now.
Interesting. So what you want to do is you want to find out for sure when they open.
Mm-hmm.
And right. Our market is 4 days a week, so you don't have to just shop on Saturdays. You can shop almost any day of the week, because between the three markets here in Bismarck, there's almost one practically every day. You have to cut us some slack, because we need a day to work in the garden also before we get to the market. But you can find other things at farmers markets nowadays, you know, like totally awesome baked goods. I have got people calling me for salsa already. Because apparently I make divine salsa. And it's divine in as much as I grow the garlic, I grow the onions, I grow the peppers, and I grow the tomatoes. And when they're gone, the salsa's gone. So,
Do you call it? Do you call it divine salsa?
I should, shouldn't I?
Divine salsa.
I kind of like the sound of that. Celestial salsa.
Ooh.
Yeah. Way to go.
It's heavenly.
It's totally heavenly. Like, I have one gal that buys 12 quarts and then comes back for more. And it's like, this is so cool. But seasonal. You have to think about seasonal, which is something that people have gotten away from.
Yeah.
They actually think that strawberries are in season year-round because you can find them at stores year-round. Yeah. But that's not how this works.
Well, it can be important to remember that, too. When you go in, you go grocery shopping with a list, and you can expect, for the most part, to get anything at the grocery store all year. But paying attention to that, well, we're not going to have pumpkins the first
in
week of
July.
July.
Right. You know? And it's so hilarious. We go through this all the time. Once every time I'm at market, no matter what time of year it is, somebody will come in and go, isn't there any sweet corn? And we're like, please, people, think about this. The sweet corn is usually the middle to the end of August. Depends on the rain. But you have to kind of keep these kinds of things in mind. And like there's a lot of farmers markets that have vendors that do CSA or community supported ag boxes, and they tell you that right away too. In the beginning, it's light, you know, your little green onions and lettuce, maybe some radishes, you know, and then you go on to the tomatoes and peppers and things like that, and then you get the squash and the corn and the potatoes, you know, as the boxes go on through the season, they get heavier and heavier, and it kind of like is sort of like you take an average of everything you get. And of course, your body is seasonal also. So there's a reason why you start craving lettuce in the spring, because your body's waking up and it wants to go outside and it wants to eat lighter foods because it's warmer. You know, so eating seasonal, we can talk to you about those kinds of things. You can sometimes sample at markets. There's a lot of times, like if you don't know what a choke cherry jam tastes like, there are people in the world that have never tasted choke cherry jam.
Wow.
And I find that really hard to believe. But we'll sample these kinds of things. Like I have gooseberries. Oh, I love gooseberry jam. Oh, my gosh. It's like tangy apricot or something. I mean, it just has such a special flavor. But there are people who have never even heard of gooseberry before, mm-hmm. which is in the currant family. So you can go and you can sample these things. Get recipes. Find out, you know, all of the good things about local farmers and what they're doing and how they're part of the community. And make it a weekly routine. Like, it's really, really important to support the farmers while they're out there. Because in the wintertime, we're like watching the snow blow across the prairie thinking, oh, when can I get in the garden again? And so you can get, like, I wouldn't insult farmers about, you know, like when people come up and they want to know how much a quart of sauerkraut is, and I tell them and then they make a face at me. I'm like, you know, I'm just trying to make a living here. And things are, you know, it takes time to do things. However, if you are canning for yourself, you can call your local vendors and you can say, look, I'm in the market for 30 pounds of picklers as opposed to just 1 pound. You know, can you cut me a bushel deal? And a lot mm-hmm. of times, mm-hmm. you know, it saves me the work of bagging them and washing them. I can cut you a deal. And especially if you're a good customer of mine, I think if you're a good customer of the farmer's market, you can probably get a few better deals than if you just show up out of the blue and you're grilling somebody for a recipe they don't want to share, that kind of thing. So we're there to help you, and we really appreciate it when you bring Starbucks for us as well as yourself. Just saying.
So there's no reason why you shouldn't be eating fresh vegetables and fruits this summer, because the local markets are, they're up and they're going. If they're not going now, they'll be going very shortly. So Main Street Eats, thank you so much, Sue Balcom, for being with us, and have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Alzheimer's Association, here for you and the 15,000 people in North Dakota living with Alzheimer's. Providing support groups, family care consultations, community classes, and a 24/7 helpline. Learn more at alz.org.
Your voice is one of the most immediately recognizable things about you. It's the way you interact with the world, the way you express what you think and feel. It's your vocal fingerprint. So why are we always trying to silence ourselves? Why do we admire some voices and reject others? That's next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRX.
Don't miss Prairie Public's newest show, To the Best of Our Knowledge, Sunday night at 9 Central, 8 Mountain.
This is Dakota Datebook for June 30th. In 1990, the president of the University of North Dakota, Thomas Clifford, took on the additional task of serving as interim chancellor of the newly formed North Dakota University System. After what must have been a busy 8 months, Clifford stepped down on this date in 1991. Born in 1921 in the small town of Langdon in the northeast corner of North Dakota, Thomas J. Clifford was a go-getter. Attending the University of North Dakota in Grand Forks, he earned a Bachelor of Science in Commerce in 1942. Following the outbreak of World War II, he joined the Marines. Enlisting as a private, he worked his way up to the rank of major, earning a Purple Heart, a Bronze Star, and a Silver Star. After the war, Clifford returned to his alma mater to teach in UND's accounting department. By 1948, he had earned another degree, this time in law. He'd been promoted to full professor and named head of the accounting department. In 1950, at the age of 29, Clifford was appointed Dean of the College of Commerce, in the process becoming the youngest dean in the university's history. After a brief stint at Stanford, Clifford returned to North Dakota to become UND's Vice President for Finance. The next big step came in 1971, when he was named President of the university. From the start, he labored to expand the school, adding new facilities for nursing, law, athletics, housing, and engineering. Many departments, such as the School for Aerospace Science, developed into successful, internationally known programs. Furthermore, the student population increased from under 8,400 in 1971 to over 12,000 in 1992. Grants and contracts grew sixfold, and the university's annual budget rose from $24 million to $174 million. Clifford finally retired from UND in 1992. However, North Dakota did not forget the lifetime of dedication and hard work. 10 years after Clifford's retirement, Governor John Hovind awarded UND's former president with the highest civilian honor in the state of North Dakota, the Theodore Roosevelt Rough Rider Award. This Dakota Datebook was written by Lane Sunwall. I'm Marie Offit.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by Humanities North Dakota, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
Prairie Public is thrilled to bring the Moth Main Stage live storytelling event back to the Fargo Theater. Expect to laugh, cry, and bond with a theater full of strangers on Thursday, December 1st. Tickets available now at jadepresents.com.
That's it for today's Main Street. Tomorrow, it's our monthly journalist roundtable with News Director Dave Thompson. He visits with Cecile Worman, editor for Journal Publishing and Crosby, and Mike Jacobs, columnist and former publisher of the Grand Forks Herald. Join us tomorrow for Main Street at 3 and 7 Central. I'm Alicia Hagelin-Thorpe. Thanks for listening.